We are in the book of Acts. You may remember from Acts chapter 18, you have Paul. He has headed to the city of Corinth. It's going to be a great work for him. In many ways, he does have some concerns. We talked about some of that introductory information last time. And as you look at Acts chapter 18, you have some information in there as far as an edict, or there was an order. This order comes from a Roman emperor, and the Roman emperor says, if you were a Jew, you got to leave. Can't stay. Now, Luke doesn't explain why that happened, but if you think about the Jew, what comes to mind as far as the Jewish people? What do they have? I mean, if you think of a Jew, what just kind of pops into mind?
Successful.
Well, maybe financially, perhaps. Anything else, though? If you're a Jew, you must be, how about religious? Okay, you know, we may associate some other things with them, but if you're a Jew, you're Hebrew, you follow the God of the Bible and so forth. There is a little secular history which indicates that this was a religious expulsion. And because of that, and because of what's going on in America right now, I'm going to teach a Bible class that I never thought I'd teach. When you look at California right now, and some of you might say, well, way out there on the coast, things are different, and there is some truth in that. But has anybody seen what's happening with John MacArthur? He's a well-known denominational preacher in California. They are threatening him with 6 months in jail if the congregation he preaches for continues to assemble. Now let that sink in, folks. In America, if you assemble, now it all goes back to COVID, so I understand that there is a health concern or health allegation here, but if you assemble, you're sort of leading your flock as they do with that particular group and the preacher. If that's what you do, you're going to spend 6 months in jail. Now, I've got to give the old guy, he's about 80 years old, I've got to give him some credit. He's got some salt. He said, if that's what you want to do, bring it on. He said, I've done ministry in many forms. Jail ministry has never been something I've done, but I'm ready. We'll see how that works out, whether the government backs down or whether the COVID stuff dies down enough. I don't know how that's all going to come out. But it is in the world, and it is in our country, but it's also in the Bible. For a long time, preachers, including me, have talked about Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, and I think everybody here in the class knows that verse, and it's well known by other people as well. Peter said, we've got to obey who rather than who? We've got to obey God rather than man. However, I also recognize that there are some Bible verses or some subjects which are, as we make in point number one, a little bit like a fire drill. We have fire drills. We have tornado drills. Do we really expect, I think, for the most part, to ever have a fire here?
No.
No. Ever expect to have a tornado here?
No.
No. So when we have the drill, it's kind of like, all right, everybody go outside or everybody do whatever you need to do, evacuate this particular section. But we never really expect that. And I do think that some Bible verses fall into that same category. We can read them, we can know them, and we can say, well, you know, that's part of the package, but we never expect it to happen here. And I do believe that Acts chapter 5 and verse 29 is in that category. And the Bible has, believe it or not, a ton of information about civil disobedience. Hopefully we never get there as a country. And that does apply certainly to our area of the country as well. But I do think it is a timely topic and something that we need to spend some time investigating. In part because we're in an area where we read about persecution from the government against some religious people. All right, Don.
Well, that's not the first time. I think in Louisiana,
yeah.
And they deal with that because of early decisions of the pandemic. So it's not the first time, but I think there's another two.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the high-profile case right now, in part because of how the state is run and because this religious group has great prominence. Other groups got into some spats with the government, but, I mean, this guy is really high-profile. So if you want to go down and start looking at other groups, obviously we do have it in other parts of the country, and this is not the first. So once again, that underscores for me the timeliness of the topic. Before we start digging into the text, anything that somebody wants to add or ask? Okay, let's dig right in. We've got Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, but as I noted in point number 4, the Bible has at least or about a dozen examples of civil disobedience. Now, if you're asked that question, how often does the Bible talk about civil disobedience? Can you find 5 or 6 references? I think a lot of people would say, well, I don't think so. But we do have several instances, and some of them are tied to persecution. You also see, as you start looking at these examples of civil disobedience, God's reaction. You might wonder, if you have a situation like Acts chapter 5 and verse 29, how pleased is God by the matter? Ultimately, that's what matters, isn't it? If we're put in this position, how is God going to be honored? How is he going to be respected? How are we going to fulfill his word? We start, and I think some have already turned over there to the book of Daniel. We're going to start with, I think, did I give the wrong reference here? I've got Daniel chapter 9, verse 1. That may not be right. I think it's Daniel 3 and verse 1 is what we want. I don't know why I got the 3 and the 9 reversed. But let's see if that's it. Yep, that's it. I'm sorry. So if you will change that, Daniel 9 and verse 1 to Daniel 3 and verse 1, we'll have that updated reference, and let's have that read. Anybody want to start with Daniel 3? We'll ask you to call on ask you to help with a couple more verses. Daniel 3, verse 1. Anybody there? And ready to go. All right, Lois, thank you.
Nebuchadnezzar the king made an image of gold, the height of which was 60 cubits and its width 6 cubits. He set it up on a plain of Dura in the province of Babylon.
Great, and thank you. Now this is a big structure. If you put the numbers into numbers that are a little more understandable by us, we have it how high? 90 feet tall. That's tall. And how wide? I'd say that was a lot of gold, wouldn't you? This is a huge structure. If you spend that much time and money on a structure, you would think it's probably going to be used for something. I mean, maybe a big visitor attraction, or maybe people are going to have to pay and go see it. Let's see. Lois, would you like to read a little bit more?
Sure.
All right, let's move you down to that same chapter, but let's see what we've got in verse 5.
That at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, bagpipe, and all kinds of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up.
Okay, what happens when you have some people who are able to play musical instruments, they're coming together and they start playing their thing? For example, you've got a big crowd of people somewhere. Bum, 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 bum. Sorry, Stan, I didn't mean to scare you if I did. That's a good illustration. What happens? You start the music, and then what happens? That's right. It's an attention-getting thing. You know, people might drop what they're doing, or they perk up and say, okay, well, it's time to go. It's time to listen. You know, they're starting the national anthem, or this service is going to begin. We've heard the music. We sometimes hear that with funerals and so forth. So they've got a bunch of music. And what were the people, when the music started to play, supposed to do? Fall down and worship. So it looks like a pretty good system as far as an attention-getting system because of the height of the statue and because of the instruments. All right, so the king has set this into motion. And if you're the king, you've spent all the time, all the money on the gold and got this big arrangement. I mean, this is kind of your baby, right? You're the king. So if people are not going to do that, you think that's going to leave you happy or unhappy?
Upset.
You're going to be upset if you're the ruler. Let's see if there's a consequence for not falling down and engaging in this idolatrous act. If you would, Lois, Daniel chapter 3 and verse 6.
But whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire.
All right, the consequence sounds pretty severe, doesn't it?
Yes.
How soon are you going to be punished?
Right away.
It's not we're going to have a trial and then we're going to put you on death row and 10 years later we'll see what happens. You might have a few more appeals. Immediately, what's going to happen to you? You're going to get burned up. You're going to be cast into this blazing furnace of fire. Well, you would think people being people, they don't want to have that experience in life. So they would say, all right, when the music starts, we will fall down and we'll worship that. But like everybody else, you sometimes find some resistors. And let's see if we have some resistors in this story. Moving down now, if you will, Lois, to Daniel 3 and verse 12.
There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up.
Okay. If you've raised children or you've been around children, here comes one talking about the other. We say, don't be a tattletale. That's that good word. People like to tattle on others, don't they? You think adults like to tattle on others?
Yes.
Sometimes they do. And do we have some tattling here in Daniel chapter 3? We do. These three Jews, they're not willing to obey the order. You have here an example of civil disobedience. And it is civil disobedience because of a religious reason. They would say there is only one God, idols are nothing, and even though there is this great grand idol, 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and made of precious metal, and there's all the pomp and circumstance, we will not submit. Now, do you think those guys had to have some salt in them to make that decision? I mean, they had to have the weight of the world standing against them, everybody else. And can you imagine, can you not imagine some of the arguments that were made by the friends? You're not a Jew, or maybe you are a Jew, and you decide that you're going to sin in this way. And you see these three fellows, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not willing to do that. What do you think some of the pressure was as far as verbal expressions of, oh, just go ahead and submit? How would you coax them? Encourage them?
How would you coach them to go ahead and fall down because it might affect all the rest of us?
Yes. You know, I've got a family. My job is dependent on this. You know, you're putting me in a really bad spot. So if you just do that, it's going to help us all out. People have used that approach. What else might have been said? Oh, there are surely a few other things that were thought. What about, it's not that big of a deal, right? What do you have to do?
Just do what everybody else
yeah, does. You know, you're not going to have to stand out. You just, and do it real quick. Or do it and not think about the idol. Think about the one true God. People would try to justify that in a lot of different ways and just, you know, go along for whatever reason. But these three guys, they were not willing to do that. Well, continuing the story, let's move down three verses and see what we've got in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 15. Lois, everybody have a copy of the sheet or not? Is there anybody that lacks one? Okay. Where do we have some extras back there, Jeff?
Right here.
No,
they're
over there.
Okay. All right, that takes care of that need. And anybody else have a need for a sheet? Okay. Lois, if you would, let's go down to Daniel 3 and verse 15. There's an unwise question that's asked here.
Now, if you are ready at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trident, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, to fall down and worship the image that I have made, very well. But if you will not worship, you will immediately be cast into the midst of a furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can deliver you out of my hands?
Okay. What's the attitude of the ruler?
It's all powerful.
That's exactly right. I have set up this image. I've got the power to enforce the law. Everybody's going to worship this. And who? And what God is there that can do what? Deliver you out of whose hand? My hand. You think God's attention got directed to that guy on this occasion? Yeah, it was time for probably a cherubim or two to show up. It was, you have crossed a line there, and that was not a good line to cross. Let's move down a little bit more. We've got these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, engaged in civil disobedience. Now the information in verses 17 and 18. Lois?
If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up.
What would you say about these three guys? Yeah.
They're dug in.
That's exactly right. You remember President Obama, he talked about the red line in the sand? That's a good expression for the Christian. We have drawn a red line in the sand, and we're not going to cross that line. We are going to be committed to God. And it may be that as we think about our God, what's he going to do? What could he do? Well, he's got the power to deliver us, right? Or it might be that in this particular case, he chooses not to use that power and we die. We don't know what's going to be our fate. But we do know this much. And what do we know? We will not submit. We will not, under any set of circumstances, violate the law of God. You think that has any application for us today? It does. And if we're put in that position, it's not hypothetical. It is that red line has been drawn in the sand. And if you are in some way forcing us, for example, let's say, let's make this practical. How could we have that red line drawn today? Where would that line be where we would say, I'm not going to step across it? An example of that.
Well, the guy in California with the Constitution gives us the right to worship.
Okay. Somebody says, you know, you're no longer able to worship. We're going to close. The world sees the church as primarily the building, so there is kind of the confusion there. But the world says, we're going to shut the church down. Well, if that's their view, then God's people say what? No. You know, we may have to revise some things, and there is enough elasticity, there's enough flexibility in Scripture to do that, but as far as you shutting us down, we will not do that. What about telling us that we can't commune on the first day of the week? Could a government potentially make that rule? They could lay down that law.
Anything's possible.
Yeah. Could they say, and this would be really strange, but could they say you have to move your day from Sunday to Saturday? Or Monday? And, well, they could try that and maybe hope that that would diminish the number of people. There are different things that they could do. And yet God's people, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, say, we will not bend. Now, that's an important lesson, a critical lesson for every preacher. It is a critical lesson for every elder. It is a critical lesson for every adult in the church. And it's an essential lesson to be taught to our kids, that when we come to things in the Bible where God has said, and we do that, I think, we try to do that doctrinally, but now we may have to do that in the civil realm as well. Bonnie, and then Stan, and then maybe Don.
Regarding the recent nominee for the Supreme Court, there was some people talking about it, that, you know, her view on abortion, and they said, well, if the Pope ever decided to say that, you know, put a hard thing out there that you cannot have an abortion if you're a Catholic, she would have to recuse, if she was put on the Supreme Court, she would have to recuse herself because she wouldn't be able to fulfill that role in the Supreme Court if the Pope ever did that.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that could be something that could really happen.
Yeah, we're seeing more and more as far as government and religion starting to clash. And for a long time, we had, at least compared to now, relatively few, or in some respects, no clashes between the two. And there's always been a little conflict. I mean, you think about David Koresh and the compound that got burned in Waco, perhaps there were some people who were religious with Ruby Ridge, those kinds of things. But it does seem to be, from multiple perspectives, becoming a problem, Bonnie. And it's important, I think, that God's people think through it so we have a good understanding of what's right and we're committed to what's right before we ever get to the situation. And then people are kind of left throwing up their hands thinking, well, you know, what do we do? No, we already know. And that's what we're going to pursue. But a lot of those questions are being asked and raised right now, and sometimes from the perspective of the Supreme Court. Stan?
Well, I think that Joshua kind of put brings us to the bottom line here. You know, it was choose you this day who you will serve.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line.
Yeah, and not so much civil disobedience there. I mean, it's a different context. It's just religious, but it is from that same basic principle. He put the red line in the sand and said, look, my family is going to be on this side of the line and we're not going to cross it as far as territory over here where you have the false gods. You're going to have to decide which side of the line that you're on. And that's always been true for God's people. You've got to either stand with Christ or God if you're under the Old Testament, or you're in the rest of the batch of people. And there are a lot of different ways to be there. Don, did you have a thought or no?
Doesn't have to violate her views on abortion. She can vote no when Roe v. Wade comes out. So that's not Supreme Court justice can do whether they want to do it.
Sure.
Yes or no.
Yeah, there is no, remember, there is no religious test. I mean, that's written into our founding.
That's not what I was saying, though. But if the Pope did say that to her, then she wanted to be a loyal Catholic to, I don't agree with the Catholic faith, but if she wanted to be loyal to the Pope, then she'd have to, I don't know, that's what
Well, see, yeah, it gets complicated, but take it outside of the religion. Suppose that the person were a member of a motorcycle club and said that everybody had to own a motorcycle to be an American citizen. Well, I mean, that would be just some kind of really crazy law. But if this person were, the Supreme Court justice were a member of that group, then obviously there would be sort of a conflict of interest. And there can be cases where people do need to recuse themselves, but every justice is going to have personal views. And those personal views could be influenced by secularism. Those personal views could be influenced by religion. It is impossible to be a Supreme Court justice or anybody and just to have a completely blank mind. You're going to be influenced by beliefs and experiences, and that's where you have to just balance those things out. And when you start making laws, well, you know, if you're a member of this group, well, what about the motorcycle club? Or if you're a member of the skeptics club or the atheist club, you can just go down the list and say, does that disqualify you? I mean, look at Justice Ginsburg. She was a member of the Jewish faith. Now, if Judaism had made a law, would that have necessarily excluded her? People didn't seem to be hollering or concerned about that kind of thing. Sometimes it can be dependent on a person's persuasion as far as more conservative, more liberal, and that's what really stirs the pot, rather than some of the other items. So always good to kind of evaluate something and see if a person's blowing smoke or if there really is there a concern about someone not being partial. Don?
Another comment that Marcia says, that's the Constitution, I forbid worship. My understanding, the state of California is going to be the same thing as Louisiana. It's not to say you can't worship. It means you can't worship together as a group. In a building, and I think you said that the church is not, this building is not the church.
Correct.
We are the church here.
Yeah.
And we did that. We complied with the governor's rule and not meeting in mass, but we found a way to worship without.
Correct.
So we got by with it. They could do the same thing they did in Louisiana. They did it in other places.
Well, maybe. I mean, I've not been out there and seen the building. Now, with our congregation, we've got a lot next door. Now, we could work, at least in the better weather months, we could work something out as far as worshiping outside. California, though, depending on where you are, and Ray, I'll draw from your living there for a little while, I would say that in some places, and I think where MacArthur is located, you can't worship outside. There's just not space.
I'm not quite sure where he is.
But there are a lot of places in California where that is not possible. I mean, you've got a building, and you can do it there because you've got the space. But unlike where we're located, you just can't, you know, go to a park perhaps, or you don't have open land next door where you can go out and do that. So if you lack that, and apparently they do, then when that government law comes up, you are having to make a choice because that would essentially shut you down.
I disagree.
Okay.
You can do it online like we did.
Okay. But
yes,
I was thinking, though, as far as people actually coming together. So that was my point. We can come together outside, or we could come together. That is true. Yeah. E-worship, corporate worship, online, that kind of creates some additional questions. I think most people are probably comfortable with that for a period of time, but, you know, for the foreseeable future, that could get us into some areas that could be doctrinal areas. I don't want to go too far with this, but we'll take a couple more hands. Ray?
Some places around the world, those kind of things have been shut down. Government says you can't do that anymore. You can't use your Bible. You can't preach. And I'm sure you've been aware of those in different areas.
China is one of them.
Sure. Yeah. And there are some countries where they still meet. They do it in different ways, but they still have, yes, a lot of that is underground, but they are still meeting. You know, you can get into some other things as far as they have had some people who did assemble in large groups in different places, and that's also been part of the equation. This was permitted for this group. This church group was not permitted to do that, and that's not equal under the law. So I don't want to turn this into a political discussion. I want to stay focused on what we're dealing with as far as civil disobedience in cases where that's necessary. But you're beginning to see that, as I said earlier, a lot of these things are starting to clash, and some questions are being raised, both on an individual level, congregational level, and sometimes at different levels in the government. Jeff?
You were talking about that the government tried to step in and set rules that would go against our beliefs. This COVID is a great example. Kentucky was one state, maybe others, that said, when you come back, you can come back and worship, but you can't sing and you can't take the communion.
Yeah.
So that state was trying to step in and say, hey, you can do this, but it's restricted.
Yeah.
And so as Christians, you have to make decisions. You're either going to come together and follow what they say, you're going to come together and not follow what they say, or you maybe still do an Easter recite thing or something.
Correct. And Kentucky's a whole lot closer to us than California. Thus, if you're talking about the reality of actually having to make some of these choices, I mean, it's here. And it could just all somehow sort of dissipate and go away and we never face it again. I don't think that's likely. I don't know exactly what the future is going to hold. It could be another disease or something else. But we do need to look at these questions. All right, Lois, you still in Daniel 3? Probably wore off the page by now. But Daniel 3, verses 28 to 30. Let's look at those three verses next.
Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who put their trust in him, violating the king's command and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation of tongue, that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." Then the king caused Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon.
All right. Now that would be a great sermon, or if we're talking about in a brief period, civil disobedience, a great package story to tell. It really goes full circle, doesn't it? I mean, here you start out with the problem, and then you've got halfway through, there's this terrible threat. You don't worship this giant statue of gold. You're going to be cast into the furnace of fire. Well, that happened for these guys. I mean, they did get drug across the line against their will. They suffer persecution, and they're rescued from the fire. And then what's the king decide? If you don't serve their God, forget about my old image. We're going to, you know, melt the gold down and do something with it, perhaps. But if you don't serve their God, what's going to happen to you? Two-part punishment. Number one, we're going to rip you from limb to limb. That doesn't sound very good. And then number two, what's going to happen to your house? We're going to burn it down, tear it down. We're going to destroy your life. Wow, what a story. That should encourage us. When we have cases where we have to choose and stand, are we going to do what God's will says, or are we going to cross the line, stay on the right side of the line every single time. Now, that's Daniel 3. Anything that you want to add or ask over what we've talked about from that chapter? All right, let's move into the next chapter that we want to talk about. That's going to be three chapters later, Daniel chapter 6. Lois did a great job. Would there be somebody who wants to read a few verses from Daniel 6? Daniel 6. All right, that'll be Steve. Let's start with Daniel 6 and verse 1. Let's get the name of the fellow who's the ruler.
"Please, Darius, set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom."
Thank you. Who's the ruler?
Darius.
All right, so we've got his name. Now, let's see from verse 4, Steve, if you move down there a little bit, what some evil men had evil guys back in Daniel 3, but now we've got some more evil guys in Daniel 6. What they're trying to do to Daniel, and remember that Daniel is the one who's God's servant.
"So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him."
Okay, what were some guys trying to do to Daniel? He's in the fire, right, so to speak? They're trying to blame him, trying to find some kind of fault or cause. And that happens to religious people. They sometimes go after them and say, well, you know, he or she is this, that, or the other thing. Let's see the answer to the next question, number 10. There was to be no what and what for how many days? I should have probably put a reference there. Anybody see it from Daniel 6? I got to turn the page. And where do you see it? Verse 7? All right. Steve, you want to read verse 7?
"All governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast in the den of lions.
Okay. What if the government said there it's offensive for people to pray in public and we're outlawing public prayer? Could a government do that?
Yes.
How would you respond as a Christian?
You know, people are always talking about how they're offended, but they don't think about us.
Correct. A lot of times it is a one-way street when it comes to being offended. Going back to the question, how would you respond? You can't pray in public. All right. Yeah. So you might say, well, you're going to have to prove that. That would be one big consideration. Let's take that a step further. What happens, a lot of people will go ahead and bow their head. Government says you can't pray in public. As Don said, if you're just thinking it mentally, they might not know that. If you're just bowing your head, but what if you mouth a little something? In Jesus' name, amen, as you finish it up. Civil disobedience. Would you do that or would you take the safe course?
Go ahead and do what God would want us to do, but until we're actually in that situation, we may not actually know.
It would be a little bit of a...
It would be nice to... I mean, I would like to say, oh, sure, I'll go ahead and do that anyway, but would I really when the time came?
Bonnie?
If you were going out to eat and we could pray in our cars before we ever go in,
mm-hmm.
I mean, who says you have to pray right when you're getting ready to eat? I mean, yes, we're thanking the Lord for what we have, but could pray at a different time without making a... I don't believe that we should... I'll stop there.
Well, no, it is an interesting question. Are we going to cower and say we're afraid to pray in public? Or are we going to invite some needless harassment and persecution and possibly jail time? Like I say, there are things that come up, the things and things that we may not even be able to foresee, where it's kind of like, what are we going to do? But here the rule is clear, right? There was to be no what or what for how many days? No. No petition and no... And prayer will be in some other versions. Anything that's being asked needs to go to who? You're directing it to the king that we read about in verse 1. Well, that's a long time, 30 days. What if today the government said you can't pray to God for 30 days? What would you do? I mean, that's the law, civil authority. No prayer for 30 days. We should go ahead and do it, and that's what we see with Daniel. If you read verse 11, Steve, for us.
Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God.
Now here we go back to the question that I raised, remember? They find Daniel. Could Daniel have locked himself in a closet and prayed?
Yes.
Sure. Could he have done what Don and Bonnie talked about, just kind of, you know, out there, he's trimming the bushes, perhaps, whatever he's doing, or he's getting dressed in his royal robes and he just mentally thinks a prayer? And nobody would have known, right? But what's he do? He almost asks for trouble, doesn't he? He says, I am not going to stop. I could hide it, but I'm not going to hide my faith. And I think here is a great example. We don't want to do anything that's foolish, but at the same time, as you're walking down this road trying to figure out what's right, he also does not try to act in a cowardly way. I had a couple hands raised. You're second. Bonnie, were you first or Ray? All right, Marcia, we start with you then.
But it says that that was his custom.
Yes.
And so for if him to have changed the custom...
Correct.
...would have sent a really loud...
Correct.
...message.
Yeah, this was not an act of pretension where it's, oh, the government says you can't do this and I'm going to go out and show off. Can't have a Bible in public, I'm going to get the biggest Bible I can find and go down to the most public place and show off. None of that is right, and God certainly would not approve of that.
And those men knew that, so they set him up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's say that the... let's try a different scenario. Let's say that the government put in a curfew from 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Sunday. 5 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Sunday. What would you do? You have brethren who say, well, I just can't get up that early. Or you have some say, I got to be in bed by 8.
We could assemble afterwards, or we could just go ahead and assemble and say our right by the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, we could make that decision. And that really gets thorny for some elders. Do we say we're going to abide by this law? And again, you can still worship on Sunday. You just can't be out and worship during these hours. But the government can do all kinds of things. History tells us that. You have certainly some Bible examples of that. Betty, and then we'll take Stan.
You see Paul working at midnight. No.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at it from the other end. How does God view that kind of action? If they put a curfew in from 5 until 9, and then we say, well, okay, we'll worship before or after, isn't that showing a lack of faith on our part?
It is. And I raised that because of the question with Daniel. Once again, could he have prayed in his closet? He could have abided by, quote unquote, he could have said, we're going to take an alternative path. We're going to break that habit that we have. And, you know, people, when they come by, they are accustomed to seeing cars, I think, out in the parking lot. And if we didn't have cars out in the parking lot at the regular time, they would say, these people have decided to abide by the government regulation. It does get really, really sticky sometimes. And that's why I say it's good to start thinking about some things as far as Christians. So when these issues come up, we've at least got a little foundation or platform to work from.
But Daniel already had the example before.
Correct.
The furnace.
Yeah.
And what happened to his friends. So why not? You know, God took care of them. God will take care of him.
Wonderful point. Probably the best point of today's class. And here's how I'm going to use that. You have, now Daniel, by the time we go to Daniel 6, he's not a young guy. He's going to end up in the lion's den. And if you didn't know, he's about 70 years old at this time. So he's a younger guy, comes to Babylon. Now he's an older guy. And I think, just as you mentioned, he's thinking back to that previous time, several decades earlier. God delivered me. I don't know what's going to happen on this occasion, but I know that I've been in the habit of praying. Now, I think when you look at COVID-19, and this is true for our congregation, it was true for other congregations as well. The people who were the most fervent as far as let's go back and let's get back to normal, younger people or older people?
Older.
Older people. Almost across the board. Now, I've not discussed this with anybody, but I will, since this is where we are in class right now, lay this out. And I think there's a reason for that. Why might older people have said, we're ready to go? Yeah, just like Daniel, he was able to say, I see what God has done, and older people have said, I am ready, not may not throw caution to the wind, but I am ready to go. God has kept us this far. And I think that perhaps with COVID-19, I've suggested this before, now some other preachers are beginning to think this as well, perhaps in God's providence, out of all the things that have happened, maybe this has been a way to sort of begin tempering God's people. Perhaps this is just sort of the first shot over the bow to say to people throughout the world, especially the church, you guys need to make a choice as far as where you want to be on the red line. You can either take a harder and firmer stand as far as commitment, and if you can trust me to get you through this and we come through this successfully, you know, there may be some bumps in the road, something greater is going to come down the road. But if you start wielding here, you're probably not going to do well in the future. So I do got a couple more hands. We'll take those in a second. But I do think that we might be dealing with another thing here. I'm going to season you some. I'm going to let you get singed just a little bit and kind of, you know, you've had it easy for a long time, a couple hundred years, but now we're going to put up a challenge and see whether you rise or fall because more is coming down the pipe. Now, we'll see whether or not that happens. I mean, the Lord could return today, but it's also good to be prepared in the way that we're discussing. Steve, I think I saw you first, and then Bonnie, we'll go back to you.
You know, this is late in class to be asking this, but where does this line up with Matthew 5:16? You know, let your light shine before men.
It lines up very well.
Yeah.
He was. This is my habit. This is my custom, and we're not going to break that. You know, I've gotten, you don't know this, but I've gotten, I don't know, multiple, less than a dozen, maybe around six, emails from people or phone calls asking what we're doing as a congregation. I've had some people saying you can barely get in the door. You have to sort of call ahead and get a seat. I mean, literally, it's like a restaurant in some places. Brian's seen, I think, a little bit of that down in the Indianapolis area.
Julie contacted them by email yesterday to reserve a seat at the 11 o'clock service, and got an email back this morning saying that services are called off today. Elders will make a decision about next week later.
Okay. So again, some interesting things are happening, and you have to make a decision where you are. Now, if you're in an area where there's a lot of sickness, elders might say it's not safe. We're going to have a Zoom meeting, but it is into some thorny areas. Bonnie, back to you, I think.
Well, it kind of goes along with what you were saying. Things don't usually happen at the snap of the finger.
Correct.
They desensitize you and condition you to. Sometimes it takes 50 years to get to a point where they want America to be. And just look where we are, looking back over my life of, you know, when I could start to vote when I was 21 back then, I've seen in the 50 years how things have really changed. So it's a conditioning and desensitizing process.
But on the flip side of it, though, God is also able gradually to help beginning to strengthen and fortify his people for things. So you have two very different tracks taking place. We can focus on one or the other, though the negative side is the one that often gets our quickest attention because there's a lot going on there, but perhaps more subtle, God says, I'm also going to help my people. And COVID might be something that really helps a lot of congregations. I think it's helped us and will some other people as well. Steve, let's not overlook Daniel 6, 22 and 24. We'll have to get about midway to class and hopefully continue this next week. So bring back the sheet if you would. Verses 22 to 24.
My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. 24. And the king gave the command, and they brought these men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, then their children and their wives, and the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den.
All right. Not a very nice way to end your day, is it, as far as over there in the lion's den? This is one more example of a circle. It starts, a lot of things happen, and God's people come out on top. And that will always be true, whether we come out on top because God delivers us in this life, or whether we come out on bottom, so to speak, because we surrender, we lose our physical life, and in eternity, we still come out on top. So, once again, civil disobedience, a big Bible topic, an important Bible topic. Lord willing, more to say about that next week.